Previously on Nighthawk's podcast. One of the great horror actors of our time, and not just horror. This man has his imprint on a lot of genre film. On top of that is just a general badass, folks. We lost Christopher Lee. We are devoting the entire episode to 1958's Hammer Films production of Dracula, also known as
Horror of Dracula. It's a book from a different age. Its place in history is because it's early speculative fiction. The modern vampire is a sexy vampire, and vampires have always been about sex, but they've been about a racy, rakish, rapacious sex. They're not the nicest creatures.
I have a shocking confession. I hate Dracula. I am not a Dracula fan. I did not like the book. I don't like the Bela Lugosi movie. However, I own a copy of 1958's The Horror of Dracula because, in my opinion, it is the superior Dracula.
I would say that the vampire tale specifically is about mannered behavior and society and about cohabitation and the things that are necessary to deal with the dead and to understand the world of the dead properly.
If you want to talk about a character whose story has been told and retold and rebooted and refreshed and remade, it's going to be Dracula.
One of the things that drags when you adapt Dracula, there's basically two parties of protagonists in the book, and they have to meet and learn that their interests align.
Well, and they also have to learn what a vampire is, how they work, how you kill them, how they survive, what the vampire rules are.
Immortality is the superpower. In a limited sense, Twilight actually gets right. Twilight makes a big deal out of being 80 years old and looking 17.
Right.
If you look at YouTube, there's a video of Jigoro Kano, the guy that codified and propagated the martial art of judo, when he is 90. Still fairly spry and able to do some judo. Tremendous technique. But he's too frail to do everything. He wouldn't be able to compete in MMA at 90. You don't need to give the vampire super strength. You don't need to give the vampire super vision. You don't need to harp on what claws and teeth it has. You just need to make it Jigoro Kano's mind in, say, Chris Weidman's body.
Buenos pickles.
Buenos pickles.
Nighthawk, so what episode number is it?
It's 90...
Nighthawks 92, Dracula? This guy sucks. 3, 2, 1.
How you feeling there, buddy?
I have felt better.
Yeah, are you still... You have been under the weather since Telluride.
That's I caught something persistent.
Persistent? Is it persistent pertussis?
It may be. I'm getting to the point where I have a lot of empathy for Doc Holliday. Like... A month of this stuff and you get where you are. You do not suffer fools.
We're continuing the spawn of Monstoberfest bleeding into Monstember because there are no rules.
Bleeding. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
So what are we covering this episode?
Well, let's get down to it. Good
should
evening,
talk
ladies.
About it?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I said should we talk about it? I didn't mean to stop you.
Yes. So let's get started. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for those of you who like to stay up late and talk about movies in fictive diner cafe settings.
It's a wonderful diner.
It is.
They make a mean Monte Cristo.
Ooh, I'll take one of those Monte Cristos.
There's a place here called D's that'll make one for you off menu if you make big eyes at them.
Freaky D's. I remember Freaky D's.
That's what some people call it. I think it's Nice D's because I'm a little freaky. My name is Matt. Who are you? Did you already say?
I don't think I did. I'm Trevor T. Trujillo. I'm your co-host.
Do you ever brag, Trevor?
Do I ever brag?
Yeah, because that would be a co-boast.
Oh.
Yeah, I just paid you back for like 3 co-mosts. So should we, real quick, give them the rundown on who we are?
Yeah.
The Nighthawks podcast.
Tell me about us.
The Nighthawks podcast is a proud member of the Hello Sweetie family of podcasts. We can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Podomatic, or at our website, nighthawkspodcast.com, where you can also find our show notes for our episodes. We'd like to call special attention this week to the Push My Buttons podcast, where they offer the latest and greatest geek talk from the gaming world,
offering compelling conversation as well as streaming and video opportunities working in tandem. I think they're up on that Twitch if you know where to find them.
I believe so. Continuing into our post-Halloween yet still spooky programming, offset by our trip to Telluride.
We're like Al Jorgensen, folks. Every day is Halloween.
You caught a little something-something up in the Highlands, and you brought it back down with you. Have you had much opportunity to see anything? Have you been to the theater? Have you been laid up? Have you been digging into that streaming? What are you up to?
I managed to get around a little bit. I saw Zombieland 2, a double tap.
Uh-huh. I saw that one, too.
That was just it was a nice bit of confectionery. I mean, if you know where you stand.
Yeah.
You like Zombieland 1? You like Zombieland 2?
This is part two of that. This is more of that. It doesn't really do much beyond that, but it doesn't really aspire to do much beyond that. So, like, I have to give them the clean bill of health on, like, I think they succeeded in making the movie they were trying to make. And it was a Zombieland movie. Like, and that's not a criticism. I'm not being flip or anything, but it just is what it is. It's not Citizen Kane. It is a movie where charismatic people riff on zombies.
It was 90 minutes when I didn't think about politics.
Except for the fact that, like, they really... Abigail Breslin got cheated in that movie. They didn't give her anything to do. I will say that. That is a criticism.
That is somewhat fair, yeah. It's a sort of screw-up to motivate the action.
So I also snuck off to the theaters, and I think this one is particularly poignant. Zombieland 2 is obviously a sequel. Spawn of Monstoberfest. We are discussing remakes. And so here we kind of have a weird nexus of that. I saw Dr. Sleep over the last weekend. Matt, did you catch this one?
In fact, I did. I Dr. Slept.
I really liked it.
I had a good time. Thought it was good.
Like, this is an avowed sequel to The Shining. It makes no bones about being anything else. But they do have to kind of revisit the world of The Shining. And so I thought this was particularly apt for this episode because they have to use certain remake elements in Dr. Sleep to convey that story. Now, Dr. Sleep is based on the Stephen King book, Dr. Sleep. The Stephen King book, Dr. Sleep, is a sequel to the Stephen King book, The Shining. However, famously, Stanley Kubrick and Stephen King did not get along over Kubrick's version of The Shining that he put on film. And so Stephen King, when he wrote the book of Dr. Sleep, specifically included elements that Kubrick had changed, so it would be very difficult to adapt it into a film. Well, lo and behold, along comes Mike Flanagan, who we've discussed on the show before. He did Hush. He was also heavily involved in The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. You might also remember Oculus. And I think we have discussed, but not forthright on the show, the Gerald's Game adaptation that he did, which was a foray into King. And lo and behold, man, that dude found a way to make a movie that is both a faithful adaptation of the novel and a worthy sequel to the Kubrick film. And how he did it was pretty clever. I think that was half the fun of the movie for me. I think the movie in and of itself is very fun. I don't know that people who aren't fans of The Shining are going to enjoy it. There's a lot going on here that's probably going to confuse you. But I was tickled with it. I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. And I kind of had high hopes going in. So that's saying something.
Yeah, I was definitely pleasantly surprised at overall, like, how just coherent it was. I was expecting it to be a bit troubled. And I was also like, it honestly, like, I don't know, like, I'm pretty jaded. Like, I'm hard to get. But it had a couple knuckle biters in it for me. I mean, there's some real yeesh in there.
When I was a kid, there was a place. A dark place. They closed it down and let it rot. But the things that lived there... They come back. Not many ride the bus this far north. You're running away from something? I'm running away from myself, I guess.
Hi. You can hear me. You're magic. Like me.
I don't know about magic. I always called it the Shining. The world is a hungry place. A dangerous place.
These people, they hurt people like us.
These empty devils, they'll eat what shines. And they've noticed that little girl.
Well, hi there.
Get out of my head! Get out!
I haven't felt power like that in so long.
They're coming.
And what's unfortunate, though, is this movie is not doing well at the box office, or at least it's not doing up to what the studio had expected, which is really unfortunate.
I mean, I sincerely think nobody knows what it is.
And that, like, could be. But I have to say, it's the best Stephen King adaptation I've seen this year. It's probably the best Stephen King adaptation I've seen in the last few years. And that includes, like, I liked It. I think this is better than It.
I was gonna say, I don't know, man. There's Mr. King's been doing some work.
Yeah, it has been a very good few years to be Mr. King. I have only watched one episode, but I have officially dug into Castle Rock on Hulu, liking where that's going.
Speaking of a Hulu watch, this is, like, it's technically part of, I guess, the Marvel universe. But have you ever watched Legion?
I have not.
Oh, it's a little too trippy.
In a bad way or a good way?
No, it's pretty good. Like, I've been enjoying it. I'm not very far into it, but it might. Maybe the reason it's not popular is because it goes somewhere terrible, but
ooh.
So far I've been digging it. It's about the idea is, what if a very powerful mutant was diagnosed as schizophrenic instead of as a mutant? And so it's like, what if Professor X never received any training, like a power on that tier, was just like given a lot of Thorazine instead of training until he finally hits a certain age where he like breaks out of it. And it's a very strange, like very fractured narrative.
Huh.
Because he's trying to put together, like, he's so powerful that he kind of influences reality. So he's trying to put together, like, what was done to him by the people trying to keep him from discovering his nature, what was done to him by drugs and bad mental health care, and what was done to, like, the world around him by his powers. And it has like a Aubrey Plaza is kind of his sidekick in it. She's his girl interrupted mental health facility buddy. And it's very surreal show, like almost painfully so to watch.
How have I never heard of this?
Well, and it's kind of odd because, like, I knew I hadn't watched it because, like, in the comics, there is a character by that name and a plot of approximately like this plot, but he's like, it's not a whimsical plot. He's a villain and it ends up going like terribly awry. So I don't know, but I would say it's a loose adaptation to its betterment, but just a cool little find.
So, Matt, I think the big news this week is everybody is digging into Disney Plus. Have you hopped on the bandwagon?
I have not. Unfortunately, I do not have Verizon, so...
Oh, so you...
I have to...
Verizon, this is not a commercial, by the way, for either Disney Plus or Verizon, but due to eagle-eyed observations by Oscar czar Cameron Maris of the Nighthawks podcast, we were tipped to the fact that... unlimited data Verizon customers or Verizon 5G home internet customers, Verizon's buying you a year of Disney Plus. So that's how I got
a deal on it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'll take a year of streaming for free 99. But I've already just started mainlining some of that nostalgia content. I watched Tron, like the old school Tron, the other day. I've got The Black Hole sitting in my queue for after the record. I watched, and guys, this movie existed in a very narrow window. It's not well remembered, and that is a tragedy. I have been stumping for it all week. I'm stumping for it now. I watched it last night. This movie holds up. It is The Journey of Natty Gann.
Full name, speak up.
Natalie Sue Gann.
Natalie Sue Gann. Where do you live?
I'm not.
Vagrant. Where are your folks?
I'm not sure, but I'm looking for my...
Orphan.
I'm not an orphan.
Put her number one.
I'm no orphan.
Sure, kid, sure.
Her name was Natty Gann.
She wouldn't just run away like that. What the hell happened back there, Connie?
She went searching for her father.
I'm calling my dad a commie.
Yeah, you want to make some out of it?
Yeah.
Well, come on, try it.
She found her freedom.
That's a nice dog.
He's a wolf.
Oh, yeah?
On an extraordinary journey.
Come on!
He ain't gonna
come
make
on!
It.
Come on!
He's never gonna make it.
He made it.
That became an incredible adventure.
I found my kid's wallet buried under a train in Colorado.
Better wise up if you expect to make it, kid.
Well, I'll do all right, Mr. Know-It-All.
An adventure that made the impossible come true.
Dear Natty, leaving was the hardest thing I've ever done. I hope you can forgive me. I love you. Come right away, Dad.
If you put White Fang in the blender with An American Tale, that's kind of what you get with The Journey of Natty Gann. It's a young, strong female protagonist during the Depression hits the road to try and find her father, teams up with a wild wolf. They have adventures as they cross the nation. Honestly, it's just a really solid, good movie. Like, and I'd put it in the tier with like a White Fang or an Iron Will or movies of that kind of era, feel, tone, and budget. Like, it's really in line with those.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on there. Of course, we're talking our way around The Big Dog. Did you watch it yet? The thing with the guy from his backpack's got jets, you know?
Oh, The Mandalorian. Yes, I did watch. There is exactly one episode of The Mandalorian out as of this record.
Oh, yeah. They're not dummies at the mouse. They're not going to put the whole season of that up. Let everybody pay $9 for it and then unsubscribe.
Yeah, I believe the episode release schedule, by the time this episode of the Nighthawks podcast drops, they will be two or three episodes deep in The Mandalorian. But I don't know. It depends on how quick I am at turning this around. But I enjoyed it. I'm intrigued. Jon Favreau knows how to... can't remember if he was...
Does The Mandalorian slowly make an exquisite Cuban sandwich?
He does not, unfortunately.
Fail.
But I'm intrigued. There's a pretty good hook at the end of the episode that is already getting spoiled, I'm afraid. I am on board with my free year of Disney Plus to watch more Mandalorian. It's not costing me anything, but I would pay for this service if I had to. May not have gotten it right away, but thumbs up to the Disney Plus. Good service.
Sandwich joke, of course, was a reference to episode 6.
Oh, damn.
Chef / Zero Dreams of Sushi.
Nice. Nice. Well done.
Every once in a while, I beat you to it.
Hello, I'm the podcaster without fear, Luke.
I'm the uncanny Ryan.
I am Kylie the Poodinger.
I am the superior Caitlin.
And I am the agitated Kyle.
And we are most of the Nerd Dome Podcast.
Every Friday, some variation of this group gets together and talks about all things nerd.
The newest stuff in TV, movies, comics, video games, and more.
So join us in the Dome every Friday to hear all things nerd.
From a bunch of people who are probably a bit too into it.
Part of the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network.
If you're a fan of comics or even just the movies they're based on,
check out the Funny Books and Firewater Podcast.
Each week, Brian,
Maya,
Todd,
and Adam review a graphic novel
and discuss what drinking games should go along with it,
as well as recommend what adult beverages should be enjoyed.
New episode drops every Monday on iTunes, Google Play,
and Stitcher.
Funny Books and Firewater.
We're a drinking podcast with a comic book problem.
Enough about food, let's talk about those who do not sup.
They dined earlier. Tonight's discussion is going to be about Bram Stoker's Dracula, directed by Francis Ford Coppola from 1992, which is still, I remember this coming out, I remember it being a big deal, and I know I was young, I was too young to see it in theaters, but this, it's, oh God, it just blows my mind that this movie is actually that old. But
my parents let me watch this. My dad was like, he's got to learn about vampires somewhere.
So this movie, Bram Stoker's Dracula from 92, was obviously pulled from the same source material as the subject of our episode 3, in which we covered the Hammer Films Dracula, also known as The Horror of Dracula. The Nighthawks episode was also known as our tribute to the late Christopher Lee shortly after his passing. So that's how...
Just as an aside, always worth repeating, he lived a full life.
Yeah. Checked a lot of those boxes, I think, is what you said.
Just take a moment and bring up Christopher Lee's Wikipedia. We'll wait in the null space where Paused Media resides.
So, yeah, that's how we're qualifying this under our kind of exploration of... redos of properties. So having covered The Horror of Dracula and now having watched Bram Stoker's Dracula, folks, there is going to be no formal spoiler curtain for these movies. We're going to be discussing the 1992 Bram Stoker's Dracula all the way up until the end. We're going to be talking about Bram Stoker's book. We're going to be talking about spoiler elements of Hammer's Dracula. So we hate to leave you in the lurch, folks, but like, there's a lot to talk about here, and it's not fair to give it short shrift just because, you know, some of you may not have seen a movie that's 30 years old.
Sorry, spoiler fanatics. It's a 30-year-old movie about a, what, 120-year-old book? We just can't.
Which is a remake of a 60-year-old movie.
Which is a remake of a 90-year-old movie.
Which in and of itself was not the first adaptation of the novel, because there was a silent version called Nosferatu back at the turn of the century.
So anyway, A Star is Born. I was skeptical, but Lady Gaga sings her ass off, you know?
Have you watched it yet?
I actually haven't, but it's the only thing I could think of handily that had been remade many, many times as well.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Spawn of Monstoberfest, Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula starring Keanu Reeves.
One bad accent. Ha ha ha.
So in 1992's edition of Dracula, Keanu Reeves plays Jonathan Harker, a turn-of-the-century, a turn-of-the-20th-century real estate broker who makes house calls. He leaves his lover and her friends behind, but don't worry, they're going to come back later. Harker travels to Transylvania in the Carpathian Mountains as he is scheduled to conduct some business with an elderly count at his mountain estate. The Count, the eponymously named Dracula, played here by Gary Oldman, is looking to move west away from the cold, drafty Carpathian Mountains and into a little modern living. Harker's there to help get Dracula's affairs in order, but this cohabitation situation in the castle becomes a little strained when Harker is at first encouraged to stay long after he had planned on being there, but it also becomes clear that he's more or less a prisoner. What's more is, surprise, surprise, Count Dracula, folks, spoiler alert, Count Dracula is actually an undead, blood-sucking creature of mythology with mystical powers and a long and mighty history. So meanwhile, back in England, Jonathan's betrothed Mina is eagerly awaiting his return. In the meantime, she's keeping herself busy with the romantic dalliances of her best friend Lucy. She has three suitors, and while Harker is escaping the castle with his life to an somewhat uncertain fate, at least for a while, the Count also escapes and heads to England. Back at home, Lucy is falling into a mysterious anemic disease. One of her suitors is a doctor. He's gobsmacked as to what's happening. He sends for a specialist. Specialist shows up, kicks open the door. Dr. Van Helsing, and he lets our folks in on the secret that Lucy has fallen victim to a vampire because, lo and behold, surprise, surprise, Dr. Van Helsing isn't exactly a blood doctor. After some early era medicine and a fair amount of eccentricism by Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing, Mina finds and marries Harker, who has been nursed back to health in a distant country after being found at a convent. Lucy dies, Mina falls ill, Dracula begins seducing Mina. Our two involved parties find out that they have mutual interests, and it's a discussion of lore, it's a discussion of discovery, and it is the practice of old rituals to combat the vampire menace across the face of Europe.
Here occurred the frightening and shocking history of Prince Dracula and the woman he loved.
I have crossed oceans of time to find you.
Yeah. Dracul.
There is a sinister, darker side to him. I find irresistible. I have never met any man with such a passion for life. He is unlike any man. What are you?
Vampires do exist. This one we fight. This one we face can take on many forms. He is both young and old. He can appear as mist, as vapor, as the fog. And he can vanish at will.
Oh, my love.
The power of his evil desire has no end.
You've got to go to him. And you've got to love him.
She is a willing recruit, a devoted disciple. She is the devil's concubine. Dracul!
Join me in eternal life. Your salvation is his destruction.
I want to be what you are. I want to see what you see. I want to love what you love.
Take me away from all this death.
Make no mistake, he must be stopped.
First off, this movie is insane. like there's a certain amount of artistic hubris here that you just have no choice but to respect, because this is like a crazy movie. It's not like watching it, I was just like continuously going, this is the only thing like this.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a very strange it's a very strange production. It has a lot of theatrical and kind of almost some at times that there's like, it borders on, I think they wanted to use like kind of traditional effects. And so there's times when it like borders on puppetry, like so many optical things are used and in lens things are used. And it's just a very strange movie because it's throwback technique, but throwback technique done like really well.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like anything else from 92.
That's true. Keep in mind, just a year later, we'd have Jurassic Park. So that gives you kind of a framework of what we were looking at in the realm of special effects, which was a huge watershed moment for CGI. And I believe it was Coppola specifically eschewed the idea of using modern technology in this film because he felt that the older technology, the optical effects and things, would help evoke a better sense of time and place and being as a historical period piece. And honestly, I think he's right. It conjures a certain, like, this is not a remake of the Bela Lugosi movie in as much as it's just they're both pulled from the same story. The old time effects that they have in here are what make it feel like a throwback to that old Universal style.
The truth is, like, I have a lot of love for this as a production.
Mm-hmm.
It has problems that are problems with Dracula, which I think is, I think you're about to say the same thing.
You know? And go ahead.
Because the novel Dracula, of which this is a fairly faithful adaptation, is just not written like something that would be written today. Like it's very like I would call it almost Dickensian. Like it's definitely an artifact of a time when people were paid by the word. And it's like
crossing your literary names there, Matt. You remix cowboy there.
It's wordy and it's digressive and it's like a lot of it's in that kind of romantic style where there's a lot of capital R romantic
epistolary style.
Yeah, where there's a lot of there's a lot of correspondence and a lot of dear narrator going dear audience.
Well, it's all done in letters and diary entries and journals. And like there is no like third person omniscience in this at all.
Is Dracula the first found footage film?
You know, Matt, I have thought about that before and how the found footage style, the oeuvre, if we can shout out to our friend Stephen DeGennaro, who played in this sandbox very successfully, that epistolary style of the non-objective point of view, like, I think so, too. I think found footage is the modern equivalent of this old epistolary writing style.
But, yeah, so the point being, like,
Matt, we can't say that too loud because I really, really, really don't want to see the found footage adaptation of Dracula. Don't do that. Everybody, please don't do that.
Oh, I think we're going to. I think we're going to now. It's in the public domain.
I have a weird history with this movie. I paid money to rent this movie, but I did so at such a time in my life, and I'm not saying this is exemplary behavior. My contract says basketball player, not role model. I largely rented this movie because I heard that there was some naked female breasts to be had. And I believe I skipped most of the movie in lieu of those particular scenes and didn't pay a lot of attention to it. So for all intents and...
You paid a lot of second in that case.
So for all intents and purposes, this was actually my first time having seen this. And folks, I said this in the Christopher Lee episode way back in episode 3, and that's where I kind of first aired these feelings that I have been keeping bottled up. I just have to confess, across the many mediums I've taken it in, I just don't have a love for Dracula as a story. The actual Bram Stoker book, Dracula, the story told therein is just not a story that does much for me. Now, there is a lot to love in this movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie at all, but there are some things that don't work. Overall, I see why people enjoy Bram Stoker's Dracula, but I still have to, and we'll get to the rankings later, but like the Hammer Dracula is still my superior Dracula. And that's not coming from a hipster thing. That's something I discovered in that episode that like, holy shit, this is the Dracula I can watch and enjoy. Coppola's Stoker's Dracula, not so much.
One thing that got me structurally about Bram Stoker's Dracula is how much is completely omitted. That's awesome. Like you're just supposed to imagine that he's killing everybody on the ship.
Yeah. You know?
like locked on a ship with a vampire is a whole horror movie all by itself.
Right.
And we have like Van Helsing, who clearly has some kind of background with this situation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just an amazing, you know, there's a big time jump with Harker and a big time jump with Renfield and a big, I don't know, like it's kind of reminds me of one of those things, like, why wasn't there just more of this? But simultaneously, there's also enough for the movie they did make. So you're like, well, it's a little overstuffed and understuffed somehow. It would have made a great HBO series.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I don't know. I think a lot of my problems with Dracula as a book, and I've read, like, it's not like I haven't given this a chance, and I'm not saying that any of you who are Dracula fans are wrong. I'm just saying this isn't the property for me. And to that end, like, I think part of my hangup is just something about the structure and pacing of the original Bram Stoker story that doesn't translate well to a modern audience.
You know what they need is Idris Elba to play Dracula.
Oh my God.
For no, all the things.
Just let it happen. Okay, now we've put that out in the universe. Scrap the found footage Dracula. Idris Elba Dracula. Put that out in the universe.
You hunt, what is it? You hunt American vampires? No, sometimes I hunt British vampires.
So, but, yeah, I mean, like, I have a big hump to get over with this movie that I just don't like the story. That being said, I liked a lot of other stuff in here. Like, my movie ticket was not wasted. My paltry rental fee on Amazon, I didn't demand a refund.
Well, and that's like I said, the movie that exists that is Bram Stoker's Dracula is insane. Like, Dracula's played by Gary Oldman.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to my home. Enter freely of your own will and leave some of the happiness you bring.
Count Dracula?
I am Dracula. And I bid you welcome, Mr. Harker, to my house. Come in. You will, I trust. Excuse me that I do not join you. But I have already died. And I never drink wine.
An ancestor, I see a resemblance.
The Order of the Dracul is the dragon. An ancient society pledging my forefathers to defend the church against all enemies of Christ. The relationship was not entirely successful.
Oh, yes.
It is no laughing matter. Draculs have a right to be proud. What devil or witch was ever so great as Attilar, whose blood flows in these veins?
And he just annihilates it because he plays Dracula at like five stages.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like there's sort of Dracula the cosmopolitan who is abroad in London society and seducing Mina Harker while Jonathan Harker is still locked up. And then there's the old count that is the face he shows to Harker. And then there's the knight in the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a full on monster suit here too.
Yeah.
There's a one. It's somewhat funny now because it invokes What We Do in the Shadows. But there is a scene where the vampire hunters put him in a corner and he turns into a swarm of rats. And it's pretty freaky. And like there's just a lot here that is really like the early scenes in the castle, like clearly something is immediately amiss, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not like it almost informs the character of Harker because he would have to be extremely desperate or greedy to not like go, whoa, no, I'm just gonna go.
You mean to go,
sorry, I'm
whoa.
Clearly you guys are not Jehovah's Witnesses. I will go knock on a different castle. You're not church material because like the old man, Gary Oldman, is extremely off-putting.
One of the things I actually have bulleted to talk about is another major red flag in this situation. Renfield, who is a character from the book, was Harker before Harker was. He was the Count's real estate go-between for this firm. And that character came back fully insane and is locked up in an institution for the majority of the proceedings in the film.
I'd like to point out that technically that's not true. Renfield has some unsettling mannerisms, but the things he related that got him locked up were actually correct.
Touché. Well done.
And oddly enough, Renfield is played by, of all people, Tom Waits.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, I've seen Tom Waits in some stuff, and this is Tom Waits acting the least like Tom Waits that I've ever seen. But on the same token, I wonder if this is the most Tom Waits I've ever seen Tom Waits be.
It's probably because it was Francis Ford Coppola and he told him what to do. Everything else I've seen Tom Waits in, Tom Waits was probably in charge.
You think he was the big swinging dick on the set of Mystery Men?
I can't really imagine like Ben Stiller telling him what to do. Like, okay, Tom, we're gonna do it. We're gonna do Tom take, then we're gonna do a Ben take. You know, I don't think that happened.
Would you care for an old Dr. Theod or Canapé?
No, thank you, Mr. Renfield. How are you feeling tonight?
Far better than you, my lovesick doctor.
Is my personal life of interest to you?
Of course it is. All life interests me.
Your diet, Mr. Renfield, is disgusting.
Actually, they're perfectly nutritious. You see, each life that I ingest gives back life to me.
A fly gives you life.
Certainly. But you might as well ask a man to eat molecules with a pair of chopsticks than to interest me in lesser carnivora.
I shall have to invent a new classification of a lunatic for you.
Anthony Hopkins is completely off the chain as Van Helsing.
Yeah, their performances, both Oldman and Hopkins, are just... That's what got me through this movie. Because Keanu Reeves, not good. These guys, fantastic.
Hopkins essentially rescues the movie when he shows up because he's just, he's almost his character from Legends of the Fall. Like he shows up and he's just like, get me a beef steak and some scotch. We're going vampire killing.
We'll need your strength for the dark days ahead. Mina?
Doctor.
Yeah?
How did Lucy die?
What?
Was she in great pain?
Yeah, she was in great pain. Then we cut off her head and drove a stake to her heart and burned it, and then she found peace.
Doctor! Please.
I did want to run down our Spawn of Monstoberfest remake questions to answer. These are things that we're not specifically setting out to address them as bullet points, but just to kind of guide our conversation. Is this faithful to the source material? We've touched on that. If it is or it isn't, is that working for or against the remake? Is this doing enough of its own thing? Is it a worthy remake of the original, in this case, if you're comparing it to the Hammer films Dracula? Is it better than the original? Is it a good film to stand by itself as a property? I think as far as standing on its own, this is definitely not beholden to any other franchise or canon or telling of this story. I think it stands really well on its own, almost to a fault, fair. Because another problem I have with Dracula is we all know the story. Matt, you were kind of telling me when we were pre-gaming that you thought that the faithfulness to the source material was one of the stumbling blocks that this movie had.
It's so slow and there's so many perspective switches, and like right when we start to get attached to Harker, they're like, okay, we're gonna do a 6 months time jump. And like I mean, it's defensible because the whole idea is that like he was manipulating them. As soon as he saw Mina's picture in Harker's stuff, he wanted her and started to change his plan to include her. You know, and that's part of the creepiness of Dracula the villain.
And we should probably mention that that's an aspect of this movie that is invented for the film. This movie opens with this kind of broad, and I mean romantic stylistically, not necessarily romantic in the Harlequin romance sense, but this kind of broad romantic retelling of the legend of Vlad Tepes. And there's, according to the movie, Elizabeth, who is his love, and his enemies tell her that he has killed himself, so she throws himself from a tower. He doesn't get there, and so he blasphemes, and that's how he becomes a vampire. This is all Coppola, by the way. And so there is a subplot running through this where Mina bears a physical resemblance to Dracula's first wife. And there's this weird kind of, and now when I say romantic, I do mean in Harlequin romance sense, subplot between he and Mina that like, it left me pretty raw. I was like, oh man, this is just not working for me at all. Like, Dracula as the tragic romantic figure is just not my cup of tea.
Well, and then you get into, like, I don't remember, like, how much was that in the book? Like, literally not at all?
Literally not at all.
But he does come after Mina, after,
After Lucy, yeah. In the book, there's snacks. No, I'm not a snack at all. Look, baby, I'm the whole damn thing. In the movie, and admittedly, in the Hammer films Dracula, the horror of Dracula, that is the plot that gets the Count out of his castle, is that Harker is there. He sent Sub Rosa to slay the vampires. He kills Dracula's bride first. During the attempt, Dracula wakes up, does away with Harker, and then flees into Harker's home and begins seducing Lucy and Mina, intending to take one or the other for his bride to replace the one that Harker killed. So I don't know if that's where it came from with Coppola, but, like, yeah, that's all invented the film.
But no, the way I described it to someone when we were talking about doing this episode is I described it as a Baz Luhrmann movie that was a horror movie instead of a musical. Because it's just so off its gourd. Like, it's compelling proof that you don't have to legalize it for people to smoke it. Like, and it's worth watching just for how wacky it is.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Yeah, I didn't have a bad time watching this movie. And you actually kind of asked me to, you know, because we like to know what we're getting into when we do a record. But you asked me, it's like, hey, you know, roll out the granularity scale here. Where did you put it? And I said probably in a low 50s. Like, it's over the hump. I will recommend this movie to people. I think it's a movie that a lot of people love, and I see why they love it. It's just not for me. So I don't have a lot of love for beyond the, oh, yeah, you should see it. And so that's kind of where I am with it. And honestly, like, the weird romantic subplot just really stuck in my throat. And it's, you know what it is? It's the same thing, to throw back to the Monstoberfest episode that we did. It was a joint episode on Misery and the 1925 Phantom of the Opera. And we talked about how in the Gaston LaRue novel and the 1925 Phantom of the Opera, he's this horrible monster, this serial killer who came from far-flung lands to ply his trade. And by the time Andrew Lloyd Webber gets his hands on him, he is this tragic romantic figure that is, you know, is worthy of pity. Forgive, you know, notwithstanding the fact that the entire movie he's been gaslighting and trying to kidnap a woman for his own marital bedchamber under the opera. It feels a lot the same way with Dracula, where he's creepy, he's gaslighty, he uses hypnotism to make you do things against your will. He is unholy. He's invasive. And to have Winona Ryder have this... Winona Ryder, by the way, I don't know that we've... I think we may have committed a grievous error and not mentioned that she was in this. But she plays Mina, and, like, at the end, when Dracula finally meets his doom, there's this weird kind of reticent moment for her. And I'm just like...
Yeah, and there's even a moment... And there's a moment in this movie where it looks like Harker is never going to make it out of confinement.
Uh-huh.
And he's just legitimately going to seduce her and get her to marry him. Like he's just going to win,
mm-hmm.
You know? and he's fairly like it's hard to explain. Like they make it so it's kind of blurred as to what is the mentalism,
mm-hmm.
You know? And it's very, and she is very... She's very like, oh, ho, ho, am I having a digression for my betrothed? And it gets very, she gets very Jane Austen about it. And it's almost like she's tired of living vicariously through her friend.
Uh-huh.
And then like, it does have this weird puritanical, like, sex punishing element to it,
mm-hmm.
that I didn't think it strictly required, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and for Keanu, too, because, like, he kind of falls into the trappings of the weird Hydra brides of Dracula and getting all up on him while naked, etc. You know, like, vampirism is very much seduction in this. It's very much doing things out of wedlock. It's sleeping with somebody who's not your husband or not your betrothed, which, you know, that's shot through with, I think, most vampire literature. So that's not unwelcome, but I don't know. It just... Dracula as a romantic figure is just not... It's weird to see somebody look at Dracula die and then have the character feel like a regret or maybe even like reticence or reluctance. And it's just like, that is so... When he got your best friend, Mina, she ate children.
Oh, yeah. that should... Yeah, I'm glad you said that because that, like... Like, going back to this movie as a visual artifact, like, the funeral scene and the post-revivification scene with Mina is bananas. Like, the dress she's wearing.
With Lucy?
Yeah, with Lucy, rather, yeah. Her vampire makeup, and then also when they're fighting Dracula, his vampire makeup is a very kind of almost reminded me of something out of Fright Night, like a...
Mm.
Like, it's a real strong, practical makeup, you know?
Because
he's got, like, a man bat for him, and he's got a couple different stages of being Gary Oldman in the combat, so it's kind of like... And then the other thing that I don't... Like, it's hard for me with a modern sensibility is the idea that her three random suitors, who are very thinly characterized... are just going to turn out and go do business with the vampire, you know?
Right. The fiance, the doctor, and the Texan.
Yeah, it's a very strange plot point that all these guys that were romantic rivals decide they have to band together and fight a vampire.
For the good of the woman who does not want to marry two of them. So something that we do have to discuss. Matt, you know me. You know me, buddy. You know I love my Keanu. I love my Keanu. He's my Keanu. I love that boy. This is not the Keanu performance that I would hang on the refrigerator if I was raising Keanu as my own child. This is not his strongest work. And we just have to confront that, you know. And it's also a little ridiculous, too. And maybe he just... I know I had this problem when I was in college theater, that he just has that thick... very absorbent hair. But when you have a makeup on Gary Oldman that looks so damn good, and then I believe you are left to imply that Keanu has developed some gray streaks after his stresses at Castle Dracula, and they look dreadful. They are so just spray painted on.
Yeah, it's like Halloween store tier.
Yeah, it's bad. But we love Keanu. But I do now remember why Keanu was not the beloved person in 1992 as he is now. He's grown, I believe.
Yeah. Let's say he's grown.
He's grown a lot in good ways. Good ways.
I don't know. It could just be like also that whole, directability thing that we've touched on before.
You know, because I thought about that because we've said that it seems like the best performances that... you get out of Keanu Reeves is that he's a good performer, but he must be directed. And even directed by himself, he's done a good job both in front of and behind the camera. But I don't want to say that Coppola's bad at directing. But then I also remember that he put Sofia Coppola in The Godfather Part 3. So I don't know, man. We're going to have to buy Francis a glass of wine or something. See if we can figure that one out.
Well, and then the other one. The other thing that I was given to understand is that this was kind of an argumentative set.
Yeah, Winona and Gary Oldman didn't get along, and Winona actually brought the script to Coppola as kind of I guess the meeting was like a smoothing over or a peace offering or, hey, we just want to make sure that I'm not mad. Are you mad? I'm not. Okay, we're not mad. Because originally Winona Ryder had been in The Godfather 3 in the Sofia Coppola role. And then I believe had some health concerns and had to drop out on short notice. And so that was kind of the olive branch between the two was Winona's like, well, hey, there's this thing you should do. And Coppola is a big Dracula fan. Growing up. So that's where it all kind of came from. But then I guess Winona and Gary Oldman were not the best of friends on set. I guess it was a difficult time in his life, and she was a teenager, and they just didn't get along. Rumor has it they have since made up, but yeah, I guess it was kind of a contentious set.
Well, I'm going to attribute it to that, because that's just not Keanu's energy, man.
This movie did get some Academy Award wins. It won for sound editing. It won for makeup, which I think is pretty deserved. It won for costume design, which I think is pretty deserved. And it also had a nomination, but not a win, for art direction, which I think I liked the art direction here. I liked all the elements of the movie. I just didn't like the movie in toto. The script just, I'm going to stop trying to justify it. And I'm a grumpy old man. I'm a grumpy old man. What do you want? I also did find this little trivia bit, Matt. There is a novelization of the film written by Fred Saberhagen.
That's very strange.
How that works. When you have Bram Stoker's Dracula clearly evoking the name of the author who wrote the book Dracula, turn it into a movie and then turn it into a book written by Fred Saberhagen.
Fred Saberhagen, Hagen, I'm not sure which is correct, but he's a fairly legit sci-fi author. Like, he's a guy with enough credits of his own, you know? It's strange that he took the job, but I guess everybody's got to eat.
Yeah, and just...
Man's got to eat, Leahy.
Seems like you could, just sell the book? But maybe the book isn't sexy enough. Maybe they needed more sex. Maybe it was a junior novelization and I'm giving it too much hell. Maybe it was a 102-page book with 16 pages of full-color photos that you get at the Scholastic Book Fair. I don't know. At the end of the day, any final thoughts about Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula as starring Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder?
I'm not sure I can tell you to spend your money on it, but I could say for sure, just watch this if you can as a phenomenon. It is a one-of-a-kind movie, and that's why it's divisive. Like nobody... There's only, I can't say it's completely one of a kind, but there's only a couple like this kicking around.
My final thought. I'm sorry that this isn't my thing, and I'm not saying it is a bad thing. I'm just saying it's not for me. I don't think this is a bad film. I think this is a film I would recommend people see if their interest is piqued, or if it's something that... they feel they'd be interested in. I think if that's worth $3 to you, that's worth $3 to you. But as far as a good semi-spooky guy in a cape with sharp teeth sucking on women's necks and women eating children, I'll take the much more concise horror of Dracula.
Vampire in Brooklyn. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say Vampire in Brooklyn.
Vampire in Brooklyn, yeah.
Vampire in Brooklyn's actually not uncreepy. Like, it has some stuff in it.
I have never actually seen Vampire in Brooklyn. Maybe we'll have to queue that up for next month's Toberfest.
It's definitely got the problem that it can't decide if it's funny or not.
Yeah.
Like, it's really uneven. But there's actually kind of some cool vampire effects and some cool gore. And at one point, Angela Bassett becomes a vampire, kind of, which is pretty cool. Because she's already pretty strict.
Mm-hmm.
Then my personal favorite line in all of Strange Days is when they're interrogating Lenny and a girl's doing it. And then they're like, hey, Lenny, we tried to find a smaller girl to beat the shit out of you, but this is the best we could do.
Well, Matt, I guess that brings us to the if-then section. If you enjoyed Bram Stoker's Dracula or our discussion therein, what should people check out?
I bet I'm going to steal yours.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to say the Robert De Niro Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right.
Which would be almost the perfect double feature with this.
Honestly, yeah, for sure. Because it is also a very faithful to the source material movie, except for a weird love plot. Done with semi-modern effects. Yeah, and you know what? And maybe this is just me further showing my prejudice. I'm not a fan of Dracula the book. I am a fan of Frankenstein, and I did like the Kenneth Branagh, Robert De Niro Frankenstein.
And then I'm trying to think of a good Dracula recommend, but I like vampires, but I've never been that hot on Dracula himself. Trying to think of, like, I'm racking my brain here. I'm coming up empty.
I did want to give a quick shout out. For as much as I don't like Dracula, I consumed an awful lot of Dracula this season, up to and including a production at the local community theater, Stage 3 Community Theater in Casper, Wyoming, did a production of Dracula just right around the holiday. As a matter of fact, and this occurred to me earlier today, and so I asked him a little bit about it, one of the fans of the show, longtime fan of the show, Todd, hello, how are you? Todd played the title role of Dracula. So the script they were performing from was written in, I believe, 1927, and it was written by Hamilton Dean and John L. Balderston. And the social mores of the time, this is coming from Todd, by the way, the social mores of the time had you show no blood, there was inhibited sexual references, minimal violence, a lot of it happens off stage. And so it was a really interesting interpretation to see that. Again, I'm not in love with the story. I wasn't in love with this particular version of the script. Now that I know it was from 1927, that makes a lot more sense. But Todd and Mary and the cast did really fantastic. It was a fun watch. It was a fun day at the theater. And for the first time, I didn't fall asleep right as they were unboxing the boxes of Earth at Carfax Abbey. So hats off to you folks, and wanted to shout out to Todd on that one. If you haven't listened to one of our oldest episodes, episode number 3 with the horror of Dracula and our salute to Christopher Lee, we'll have a link to that in our show notes. And Matt, I think you're pulling double duty this week. You were just on another podcast. You've been cheating on me.
Oh yeah, I dropped in on my friend has a sort of loosely focused on martial arts and skepticism podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The name of his website is bullshito.com.
He drops casually like it's no big deal.
Well, it's you know, I mean, it's a medium deal.
Well, I mean, Neil puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else. He just does a backflip when he's doing it.
You know, that song is actually, or that saying is actually bullshit. I load the pants up on both legs, and then I kip up and into the pants.
Huh.
I will not put them on one leg at a time. I will not be ordinary, sir.
You are such a rebel.
Oh, I remember my other one. Shadow of the Vampire, which is I will include it for being similarly ambitious and wacky. it is a movie set on the set of the aforementioned unauthorized adaptation of Dracula Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
And the conceit is that they filmed it with a real vampire.
Right.
And so the Nosferatu, the Count Orlok in question, is played by John Malkovich. And it's pretty intense.
I thought Malkovich played the director. I thought Malkovich was playing Murnau. Now, I haven't seen this movie, and the reason I kind of said, oh, but of course, is because literally before this phone call that I'm on right now with you, is with a phone call with friend of the podcast, Jason Nabalski, talking about how I had never seen Shadow of the Vampire and what a good film it was.
No, you're not wrong. It's Defoe is Orlok.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe.
And Malkovich is Murnau. Malkovich just kind of looks like, well, I shouldn't say that because it's mean, but but then the supporting cast here is pretty good because you have Cary Elwes is the director or the cinematographer. I'm not sure which, the guy in the chair that turns the crank on the camera, and Eddie Izzard is Jonathan Harker, or the actor playing Harker in their production.
Well, and it's important to note that Cary Elwes was also in Dracula as Arthur, the Lucy's betrothed, or her fiance that she finally settles on. So he's got a little double duty there, racking up them vampire credits.
And it's kind of like, it's got Udo Kier in it. We're positive for Udo Kier.
Well, now I have to see this.
Oh, and on the Keanu angle, you could also round this out with Constantine, the sort of the sort of underloved Hellblazer adaption.
Yeah, it's another one that, like, I don't hate it, but, you know, some weird changes were made that I just don't understand.
The only thing wrong with it is it used a license that it didn't utilize.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, if it was just called Keanu versus Demons, I'd be all over
Bingo.
It.
Bingo. You nailed it.
You know, and then they nipped that poor they had a good Hellblazer show going, and they nipped it in the bud, you know, killed it before its time.
Yeah, I was afraid that was going to happen, so I never started it, which is probably Speaking part of which, the problem.
They're doing a Witcher show. I don't know if you're familiar with the Witcher property, but it's a video game.
Uh-huh.
They're doing an adaption of it with Henry Cavill as the main guy.
Yeah.
And they haven't released it yet, and they already greenlit a second season.
Hmm.
So all I'm saying is they better not cancel The Expanse. When they talk about canceling The Expanse, I think of there is footage of David Cross that was taken on set of Arrested Development, mm-hmm. just bawling out this.
I got an idea for what you can do. Why don't you fucking fire your complete marketing team, all right? Get a new one in there. Knows how to market a show that won 5 motherfucking Emmys, Golden Globes, SAG Awards, WGA Awards, DGA Awards, Producers Guild Awards, Critics Top 10 lists. You know, if you can't market that kind of show and get better ratings, then maybe the problem doesn't lie here. Maybe it lies with marketing. Good night.
He's in his
Mrs. Featherbottom.
He's in his Arrested Development costume. It was one of the scenes where he's hiding in the attic, and so the fact that he stopped in mid-read in costume and just let this guy have it is like it's both childish and wonderful.
Well, and it's another good thing to remember, a great piece of advice, medical advice from the late great Mitch Hedberg. We're just going to play this down here.
I went to the doctor. All he did was suck blood from my neck. Do not go see Dr. Acula.
Good advice, right?
I would say quite sound.
Well, Matt, I think that's about going to wrap it up for me. Do you have anything else you need to get off your chest? When can we catch you on the Bullshito podcast, by the way? Do we know?
You know, I don't know what their lead time is. It's probably in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, well, keep watching our Facebook page for details on that. In the meantime, keep up with other members of the Hello Sweetie podcast network over on Apple Podcasts. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher, Spotify, Podomatic, several other, just Google us, use the internet. You can find us also at nighthawkspodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at Nighthawks Podcast, on Twitter at Nighthawks Pod. And Tom Waits recorded an album called Nighthawks at the Diner. Tom Waits is in this movie. Tom Waits imbues this show. Lots of respect for Tom Waits. I'm going to say Tom Waits one more time.
I think it was Tom Waits who taught us that we don't meet nice girls in coffee shops. That's a Tom Waits lyric,
yes,
Trevor.
Yes, I don't know.
It's not a literal truth. yeah, I think we're going to close the lid on this coffin because it's almost morning.
Nice.
And you share my bed, you share my name. We'll go ahead and call the cops. You don't meet nice girls in coffee shops. She said, baby, I still love you. Sometimes there's nothing left to do. Oh, but you got to hold on, hold on. Baby, gotta hold on and take my...
My favorite Dracula action, now that I think about it, is clearly Count Chocula. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite Dracula adaptation. You go to Subway, tell them it's for a duck. That has probably gotten me about $130 worth of free Subway over my life. Yeah. It used to work really good, but it's dying off now as Mitch Hedberg falls into obscurity. Ooh, do they have the time machine?
I have not looked for the time machine. I will have to look for the time machine.
Or is not the time machine. Not what's the damn time travel movie? That, you know, the one with the thing. Where the kid finds that the time machine is garage.
Huh?
I can't even remember the name well enough to Google it. But it's like Peter, the guy that was Keys in E.T. Peter, what's his name?
That was who in E.T.?
The villain. I remember it was a, okay, I gotta look it up. I gotta look it up. We gotta stop everything. Stop the presses.
I have a Google window open, but
Peter
it's...
Peter Coyote.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, here we go. The Blue Yonder, a 1985 American science fiction adventure film produced by Alan Shipley, or Alan Shapiro and Nat Hanley, stars Peter Coyote, Huckleberry Fox, Art Carney, Dennis Lipscomb, and Joe Flood.
Oh, also my known as Time God.
Flyer.
I haven't thought of that movie in decades. Holy crap, you have just opened up the floodgate. Oh my God. I don't know if they have it.
It was one of those ones that I happened to have it on a VHS when I didn't have very many VHSs to watch.
So it got a lot of heavy play?
Yeah, so I watched it a lot, and I can't tell you if it's good or not.
Hello, sweetie.
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hello, little boys, little toys.
I'm a bunch of a-holes.
Guess who's back? Back again. Sweetie's back. Tell a friend.
That's right. Hello Sweetie Podcast is returning with brand new episodes starting August of 2019.
That's right. You heard that correctly.
You can hear us talk about so many things like tiny hats, thimbles, turtles, your mom's house,
the internet,
tiny dogs,
a game you play on your TV,
tiny dogs wearing tiny hats,
little books,
cigarettes, lots of small things.
What's with the small things? Talking about the news in the movies,
TV,
the comic books,
music,
video games,
science, and more.
Find us everywhere you found us before. Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, the internet, and Google Play.
World's Backest Podcast.
This is a Hello Sweetie Podcast Network production.